how can AI help us facilitate smaller group conversations and peer-to-peer connections? And that comes through committee and volunteer engagement, that comes through educational design, and really using AI for personalization so that AI is not the obstacle to that human connection, but I think can be an enhancer of human-human connection.
Hi, I'm Christine Shaw, CEO and President of Naylor Association Solutions, and I'm your host of the Association Advisor Podcast. We'll learn from successful association executives, partners, and clients on how to create a thriving, prosperous, and value-driven association. I invite you to join me in keeping informed and, most importantly, keeping your association profitable. Our goal is to leave you feeling inspired, more confident, and more knowledgeable. This is the Association Advisor Podcast. Hi, and welcome back to the Association Advisor Podcast. If you're joining us for the first time, welcome. We're excited to have you here. And if you enjoy this episode, please be sure to follow us on your favorite listening platform. The most powerful forces shaping the future of associations are artificial intelligence and data. Associations are asking all the same questions. How do we make AI and data work for us, and how do we use it in a way that's both practical and ethical? To help us unpack those questions, I'm joined by Tori Miller-Liu, President and CEO of the Association for Intelligent Information Management. Tori is a leading voice in associations about AI ethics, data literacy, and what it takes to implement emerging tech in helpful ways. We talk about working with data, the tech skills associations need to develop, and how to stay true to your members, even as AI reshapes the workforce. This is a topic on every leader's mind, just like it is for us at Naylor. So let's dive right in. Tori, welcome to the Association Advisor Podcast. I'm so excited to have you on as a guest today.
I'm really excited to be here. Thanks for the invitation.
You are very welcome. And as you know from our panel at the ASAE annual, AI and data, it's the hot topic of the now, I was going to say the day, but it's really the year and ongoing. And you are certainly an expert at that. So very excited to dive in and talk about it. Now, speaking of sessions, you've led sessions focused not just on AI, but talking about AI with staff, boards, and leadership teams. Tell me why you think those conversations are so important right now.
We actually took a pivot at this past ASAE annual in Los Angeles, and with Alex Mao and Thad Lurie, we developed a session that was more focused on the conversations that you should be having about AI. And so when people are asking me about it, I said, I know you usually expect like an AI session from me. This was not actually a session about AI. It was about how do you facilitate strategic and frankly uncomfortable conversations with your staff, with your board, with your members and other key stakeholders about artificial intelligence. Because in my experience, projects involving AI, they fail for a couple of reasons. I do think the attention-grabbing headlines about from MIT and others about 95% failure rate is probably overstated. But I do think that AI projects are prone to failure partially because of the people, because of change management, because you haven't had these conversations that really get to the heart of what ultimately are really high stakes, emotion-ridden decisions. And I'm thinking of questions like, what happens to my job if you bring in AI to the enterprise? Or members might be wondering, what happens to the research or the content that I'm contributing if you are using AI all of a sudden? So those are the kind of conversations that I really think is our prerogative as association executives to lead and guide and make sure they happen. Ultimately, like, you can't lead technology. AI is technology. You can't lead it. You can train it. So let's focus on what we can actually lead and do, and we can lead our people into these really complex waters.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more because, you know, even at Naylor, we're having those conversations and we went through the ebbs and flows of, okay, let's embrace it. And then nobody's really embracing it. And then you're like, well, why are they not embracing it? And You hit the nail on the head. It's uncomfortable conversations because what you don't realize at the end of the day, the human element is like, is this going to replace my job or is this going to make me seem like not authentic or that there's an ethical issue? So you're touching on all the right points. And as a leader, I've experienced that with my own staff. So let's talk a little bit about the governance part. So if you're having the conversations and you're getting your team to start thinking about it and talking about the things that are uncomfortable, What makes for strong AI governance or ethics policy within the organization or association to start?
At a very fundamental level, I think the best policies, regardless of whether or not they're about AI, are clear, concise, and ideally they were created through collaboration, especially at an association, right? AI policies in particular need to do two really challenging things. They need to optimize the benefits of AI, and they also need to help you reduce risks and any kind of adverse outcomes, right? So that means that success, when you think of those policies, is a little hard to measure because it's both about the return on investment, but also did you avoid risks and mistakes? And just like a cybersecurity policy, that's kind of tricky to measure. I mean, you can ask any kind of cybersecurity specialist and they can run you a report of, well, this is how many phishing attacks we stopped. Eventually, I think we're going to be able to do that with AI too, because AI has completely taken over the cybersecurity space as well. But you're not always going to get those reports. Sometimes you can't measure, because we had this AI policy, we avoided compromising someone else's intellectual property. That's right. A really hard risk to judge.
Yeah, no, and you're right. I mean, we're used to technology being very technical, for lack of very, you know, run by IT, people behind the scenes that can run a report and say this happened or this didn't happen. In AI, it's much different. And you know, interestingly, you touched about like risks and things like that. We just went through a training exercise where we really want you to rely on Copilot because it's integrated in Microsoft and part of our licensing versus ChatGPT, which exists outside of that, right? So there's a real practicality of which applications you should be using and the why around that. And so let's get into that. Let's talk about what you're seeing. Are there helpful uses for AI that you think associations should be using and are not taking advantage of or shouldn't be using, conversely?
Yeah, it's hard to make sweeping statements because ultimately I think the best application of AI is one that is unique to your organization and is a logical use case for your organization. So I think we can gain inspiration from each other. I will say for AIM, I've become, since late 2022 when ChatGPT went completely viral, I've become a lot less enthusiastic about content generation. I still think it's helpful for content refinement, but I'm not that enthusiastic about content that we've developed with AI. And often I don't think it never makes it to prime time, right? It goes through several iterations. I'm a lot more interested in use cases around personalization, any kind of use of AI that actually helps facilitate human-to-human connections. And I also am really keen right now on AI for our own operations that lead to greater efficiencies. So my staff can actually focus on strategy and relationships, which funnily is like the whole reason why our organizations were investing in automation, right? Marketing automation, accounting automation. So a lot of the use cases I think translate to AI applications. You're now just looking at AI-driven automation, which is why companies like HubSpot have integrated AI into their marketing automation services.
You're touching on a really important point that I want to make sure too leaders really understand is that a really good place to start is using it in repeatable tasks that can help with productivity and efficiency, right? You don't have to use it and start out with, I want you to create this content. And the other part of it too is we have seen people are misusing even ChatGPT. They're using it as a search tool versus a functional tool. And when you can get your head around how to use it and why to use it, that's when you get the big wins within your productivity or your association and helping to be more efficient.
And that's also where you're seeing some of the early use cases for agentic AI is around those replicable, known, documented processes, because it's easier to train AI agents on something that you understand and know.
Right. And that's the thing people don't realize. It's kind of funny to say this. It's contrarian, but it's technology, but it's trainable like a human, which we're just not used to that. So I do believe that, you know, the more you work with AI specific to your association in your company, the better it's going to get at understanding. We know that for sure. So
I will also throw out a use case that I think isn't as short term as things like personalization using AI. I'm really interested to see when associations start looking at agent-to-agent transactions. Mm-hmm. So imagine a scenario where your potential prospective member has an agent that makes a decision about whether or not to join your organization, communicates with your organization's agent to facilitate that transaction. So
I know that would be
those
really
are the use cases where I'm like, oh, that's, I kind of hate it, but also love it. So yeah. We'll see where it goes.
This wasn't an agent to agent, but I literally recently just went to order on the phone with my favorite local restaurant. It was an AI agent, but it took me a while to figure that out. And she only made one mistake. So I was actually kind of impressed.
Good.
So
good job, restaurant.
Now I wonder if she'll recognize my voice and my orders and remind me of that the next time I call.
So now you need an AI agent that knows your food preferences and then can order for you.
Yeah.
So all you have to say is, AI Christine, please order dinner, and you don't need to provide any other instruction.
Exactly. Well, let's now jump into the data aspect of it. You know, this is where it gets trickier, right? This is where the privacy, the security, some of more of the risks come in. So there are new tools I know. Tell us about like your perspective on how associations can better understand the data ecosystem and its uses through AI and using AI as a tool.
The first step that associations need to take is to update or create a map of their data ecosystem. And it really does go beyond your association management system. Even last year, I did a survey with Meredith Ellison, surveying small staff associations on their tech stack. And even amongst smallest staff associations, they have 7 to 9 systems that they're using to operate their organizations. When I've been at a large organization, that number shoots up. I mean, at my prior organization, we had 100 plus systems that we were using. So that kind of at least creates the initial map of your data universe. And then it's about like looking within those systems at the data that you have. And right. That's where you get to the point of data valuation in my book. I think it's really important to not just understand where does my data live, where is it getting collected and stored, but also looking at how unique is this data to my organization? How current is this data? How complete is this data? Is it of good quality? Once you kind of understand the value of data, I think that helps you make some decisions about whether or not that data is really suitable for AI. Large language models are great at dealing with ugly data, so you don't have to do a ton of transformation for ugly data to be put in a large language model, but that may not actually serve you that well. When you have garbage in, you get garbage out. So you're going to get more hallucinations with your agents, with your models, if you're just dumping into it. And I know associations, we have such a bad, well-deserved and bad reputation for basically turning our offices and our online drives into attics. We don't like getting rid of things.
Yeah.
You don't want to feed everything to an AI system. It's inefficient. It means that you're investing a lot of money in storage that you probably don't need to be. So I do think part of it is map your ecosystem, do some data valuation, and then make some decisions about what data you have that is actually valuable. I would also encourage folks to look beyond those core systems, which are typically tabular databases, and look at non-tabular or unstructured data. I'm thinking like your emails. Emails are semi-structured data. You have completely hot mess unstructured data within the body of the email, but then you have structured data in the date, the subject line, et cetera. There's often a gold mine in customer service tickets and emails, things like that.
Right.
And that's data that is unique to your organization.
Yeah. I like what you're saying there too, because well, we don't use the term ugly. We call it dirty data. And we did a big data cleanup and audit, you know, a couple years back. And it's an ongoing process because just like anything else with AI, if you're giving it dirty or ugly data, the outcome or the outputs are only going to be based on what you gave them. And so I think it's a huge point that a lot of people overlook because the attic analogy I love, you just collect it and you collect it and you collect it. And then you're like, oh, there's a lot of dust up there, you know?
Which is why it's also, I think, important to manage your scope. Because it's really, I think it's easy to get overwhelmed when you're listening to a podcast like this. And I'm like, map your entire ecosystem. That's a great endeavor to do. But realistically, for an AI project, you're going to want to identify a specific use case and work backwards and figure out the specific data sources that are going to get you the best results. And it doesn't need to be your entire ecosystem.
No, and I love what you're saying. Like you could start with email, for an example, or P&Ls, right? So that's a great one. People, I think, overlook probably one of the best use cases is in finance because it's very data driven and AI loves that. So, well, we talked a little bit about why people are afraid of it or why it can be overwhelming. We're making progress, as you mentioned. We've come a long way, and we know that it is the fastest adopted technology to date. So let's talk a little bit about what you see in the future. What does an AI workforce look like, and how might it change the face of an association's workforce and the operation of it?
I think we're already seeing the shift in skill sets. I mean, we've all seen the articles about you're not going to be replaced by AI, but you're going to be replaced by the people who really understand and are able to use AI effectively. So even amongst my small staff association, I'm already seeing job descriptions kind of shift to be able to understand not just AI, but to be data literate, because you can't really separate AI from the data. You have to have both. Which is why I think AIM's mission is so important. So I do see the skill sets already shifting. I think I can see a future, you know, 5 years from now, where we are training the managers on our team to be hybrid managers. So they're managing both humans and AI agents. I think that's very, very feasible in the next few years. The thing that I don't really know, and I've had a couple conversations about now, is what is all of that going to do to entry-level positions? Because when we're seeing the skill sets shift, or we're seeing these hybrid teams emerge, I think what you're really doing is emphasizing skills around context and oversight. So we need association professionals who can provide context to AI and human teams, but also can provide oversight and ensure that policies are followed, that we're aligned with the overall organizational strategy. That typically, historically for association workforces, has required a mid-level manager or above to provide that kind of level of skills. Yeah. So I am a little worried about entry-level positions and what the adoption of AI does to your just out of college roles in associations. I don't have an answer to that. I'll pose it to you in the audience, but that's the one thing that I kind of worry about. How do we train the association leaders of the future if we're changing or perhaps diminishing the importance of those entry-level roles?
Yeah, you know, it is an interesting problem or challenge to solve. But, you know, when I think about that, it's just sort of like going back to your point. If we look for data literacy in our candidates, it's almost like using that as a filter can help advance them forward quicker and skipping over some of those entry level, or just redefining the entry level scope of the job is a better way of saying it, because those are important. But imagine having somebody come right from college who's very data literate, who can jump right in and is not afraid of AI, is used to AI, and, you know, embraces it. So I think there's opportunity. But I want to talk about the human element of it as well, because we just talked about the example of agent to agent, or the pizza ordering connection from my local restaurant. It's like, how do we make sure, if we do become agent to agent, or the use of managing hybrid where you're humans and AI agents, how do we make sure that connection doesn't get lost?
I think the sort of brutal truth is, if you are at risk of losing your human connection and that feeling of belonging before AI, AI is just accelerating that. I don't know if AI is going to be the reason why we lose that sense of belonging and the reason why people join associations. I do think it can accelerate things quite a bit. I honestly think that in our rush to deliver mass content over the last decade or so, I'm thinking of like webinars and massive open online courses and email marketing and social posts, we did as a community move away from valuing human-to-human connection. A lot of associations lost their chapters, including AIM. A lot of associations became larger. And so it's great because we serve a larger community. We can create greater accessibility to a larger population. But it does make maintaining those one-to-one small group experiences really challenging. So I think for AIM, one of the things we've been looking at is, how can AI help us facilitate smaller group conversations and peer-to-peer connections? And that comes through committee and volunteer engagement, that comes through educational design, and really using AI for personalization, so that AI is not the obstacle to that human connection, but I think can be an enhancer of human-human to connection. So that's sort of where I'm sitting at right now with this. I think if the problem already existed, it's just going to get worse.
Yeah, that's a little scary, but also it's the challenge we all have to lean into and solve together. But I think that the big takeaway here, Tori, is No one has this figured out. We're on a journey, all of us together. We're all at different phases. And the more we run into it, talk about it, share and learn and grow from it, the better it's going to be, not just for the association space, but in general. So I appreciate conversations like this, especially from someone who's got the technical background, because not everybody does. And if you don't, it's really overwhelming. So this is super helpful. I know our listeners will get a lot from this conversation. So we can't leave without you recommending one of your favorite books. It can be any kind of book, but I know someone like you is very well studied. So tell us what you would recommend.
I think I've heard from a lot of association executives that were overwhelmed by the amount of training options related to AI and books related to AI. So I actually looked at my Kindle library to see all the books on my like to-do list. And it's so many that I'm not going to bore the listeners. A lot of them have to do with AI governance, of course. The one that I'm most excited to read, though, is one that Intellios' CIO Juan Sanchez recommended. It's called AI Activation Code, and it's much more focused on how do you actually activate AI within your culture, within your organization. So most excited about that one and most overwhelmed by the slew of governance books that are on my to-do list.
Let's read that together and compare notes in a few months. I would like to do that.
Book club.
Yeah, AI book club. Here, we'll get our agents to do the reading, summarize it, and then they can meet.
Perfect. Even better.
Well, this was so fun. Thank you so much. And how can we follow you? Are you on LinkedIn?
Yep, I'm on LinkedIn. And you can also learn about the Association for Intelligent Information Management and all about how we're transforming information management practitioners into the information leaders of tomorrow and the data logisticians of tomorrow at AIIM.org.
Excellent. Thank you so much for this conversation, Tori. It's a pleasure to be here with you today.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Association Advisor Podcast, brought to you by Naylor Association Solutions. To join our monthly newsletter, go to associationadvisor.com or just click the link in the show notes of this episode. Don't forget to follow us on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast so you won't miss an episode. See you next time.